Today we're going to be talking about one of the big things that that we are about around here, South Africa. And to kick that off, we're going to watch a video, and I want you guys to just pay attention. You guys remember that thing we do right around Thanksgiving time called Thanksgiving Food Drive? You guys remember that? 14 of you remember that. It's kind of a big deal. Thousands and thousands of boxes go to people in need. And if you watch closely in this video, you'll see some of these boxes on the other side of the world. Check it out.
South Africa is a country that experienced 60 years of institutionalized oppression called apartheid. That ended in the early 90s, which is fantastic. But the effects of that don't end when politically everybody becomes equal. After Game Change started, our plans in South Africa changed pretty significantly. And at that point, we were faced with a choice. Do we stay in South Africa? Or, as a lot of people have asked us, do we move closer to home, where it's easier to work, it's cheaper, it's closer? And we were pretty quick to answer, we're staying in South Africa. We've been going through this process where we have been looking for the best organizations in South Africa, whether they're churches or nonprofits. We are looking for organizations that are poised to change the game in South Africa. One of the organizations that we love is a church called Grace Bible Church. This is one of the largest churches in South Africa. It sits right in the middle of Soweto, which is a huge township community outside of Johannesburg, which is really the epicenter of the anti-apartheid fight. And this is a church that when we go there, we just love Grace Bible Church. When we walk in, we feel like we have the same DNA. Like, we were churches that were separated at birth. This is a church that cares for people who don't know God and are willing to run after them. And it's a church that we want to stand by because they're making a real difference in South Africa. So that's what we've been doing. And we've had conversations with them about how can we together, two churches, come together out of strength and bring transformative support and change to a community. How can we do this together and really show the world what is possible with the church?
We've come to say to you, we really love you. Modimo ha le baba, ra leboha he can see le siyabonga.
Our culture here is that we are very friendly people, and we love relationships. And when we get to know one another, it's easy to work together. And it's not just a matter of doing something just once. We can have initiatives that are going to last us for a long time, that are going to be ongoing, they're going to be sustainable. Accountability can be there. And I think we want things that can last. We don't want things that will just come and go, because the problems and the challenges we have are going to need long-term solutions. And to be able to do those long-term solutions, you can't do it without relationships.
The other organization that we are super excited about is the Topsy Foundation. And this is a nonprofit that cares for AIDS patients and cares for TB patients in a rural part of South Africa, an area where the health problems are worse than anywhere else because there is no access to health care out there. They are on the front lines every day, going out and nursing patients from their deathbed back to health. And what we see in Topsy is what we've dreamed about for years. It's an opportunity to go in and provide holistic care that lifts people up and gives people hope. And so we're talking to Topsy of how we can work together. How can we help you provide that? How can we provide expertise? How can we provide the excitement and energy that you need to change the game in this area of the country that will then spread throughout the entire country?
I would be completely wrong if I can dismiss the importance of the church around. If the roots are not okay, the tree is not going to be all right. So if there weren't churches that fits the human soul, there wouldn't be life.
I'm Rob. I am on staff here at Crossroads, directing our work in South Africa. And Just last month, I got the chance to go over with a team of 32 volunteers from here at Crossroads, and that was our first volunteer trip in over a year. And it was a huge step forward in this quest to find the best organizations in South Africa, create relationships with them, and partner with them to really make a difference in that country. And I'll tell you, the next step that's coming, Grace Bible Church is sending 34 people here to Cincinnati for our Go Cincinnati in May. So yeah, so if you see 34 South Africans looking like they're lost and they don't know where they are, please go up and say hi to them and make a friend. When we were there last month, we got the chance to attend a breakfast that was hosted by one of the organizations. And they invited 120 grandmothers to this breakfast. And these are women in their 60s, 70s, and 80s who grew up under apartheid. So they grew up under this institutionalized oppression. They're living in shacks. For many of them, they've seen their children die of AIDS. So now they're caring for their grandkids and their neighbor's kids. We met one woman who's 74 and is caring for 10 kids at 74. But she stepped up and she says, I'm going to do this. And at this breakfast, we got the chance to say, thank you. We got the chance to say, you are our heroes. What you're doing is not normal. And thank you for doing that. And they've never heard that before. Some of people on our team got the chance to give them some individual attention. They took all the lotion that anyone had in any of their bags and they were doing hand massages. And we got to give them blankets. And we had a team of dentists with us who were doing dental care. And when this event was over, the woman who organized it, Elizabeth, who you saw in the video, she was driving a couple of these grannies home and she said it was silent in the car. And she's wondering, like, do they hate it? Do they not like our time together? And she got to the shack and the one grandmother just speaks up out of the silence and she says, isn't it great for once to leave a gathering and feel better about yourself? I was like, oh, that's the woman we need to support. Those are the people on the front line who are standing up every day. There are organizations like Grace Bible Church and Topsy who are on the front line and they're there every day. And what they need more than anything is they need a commitment. They need a group of people who are committed to excellence, a group of people who are committed to love, a group of people who are just committed. And that's what we provide. We're going to stand by them. We're going to stand by the best organizations in South Africa. We're going to help them to be better. And that's how we're going to change the game in South Africa. Robbie mentioned those Thanksgiving food drive boxes. If you were here, you guys sent tens of thousands of pounds of food to South Africa in November. And I can tell you a little bit the rest of the story of that. There was horrible flooding up in northern South Africa in an area we'd never heard of before. But Grace Bible Church felt called. They're like, we need to help. We have to help up here. And as they were feeling that, our food showed up right at that time. They took our food boxes, supplemented it with fresh bread, with blankets. They all got on buses and trucks. They drove 8 hours all night. They sent hundreds of volunteers, and they were able to provide this relief that was so desperately needed in one of the poorest areas of South Africa. That's what is possible. How many boxes? It was thousands. I don't know the answer, but it was thousands of boxes. I know it was probably 40, 50,000 pounds of food. So, yeah. That's what you guys did. And that's what's possible when we come alongside these organizations. And we're talking right now of how do we do it bigger? How do we do it better? How do we do it for a long, long-term, many-year impact in South Africa? For many of you who've been to South Africa, you know when people go, your world just gets rocked. And a lot of people, when that happens, they want to make a declaration to God and say, man, I'm on board. And that happens in a baptism service that we often do at the end of trips. It's one of the most amazing parts of a week in South Africa when we go. And I know for many of you, this last series that we did, A Place at the Table, was that did that for you. You might be feeling that tug towards baptism. And we have a baptism service coming up. So this might be your opportunity to do that. And today, at 1 o'clock, there's an info session about baptism. So if you're just wondering, you know, what is baptism? Why do we do it? Come to that info session. There is no commitment required. It's just a chance for you to learn more about it. And maybe this is your time to step up and get baptized here coming up soon. Now's the time where we're going to take up an offering. So volunteers are going to come down. They're going to pass the bags. And for those of you who are new here, this is not for you. We're just glad that you're here. This is for people who call Crossroads home to support what's happening around here. I can tell you, we've spent well into six figures over the last 12 months just on South Africa in this research phase, sending teams over, sending food over. And that doesn't happen if it isn't for everyday people who are giving to support that. So thank you. And while we do that, we're going to watch a video. And this is one that is pretty exciting. We're going to watch a video about the most famous South African in the world. And I'm not talking about Dave Matthews. This is a man who's so committed to what he believes that he spent 9,377 days in prison for it. And what's amazing is the day he walked out of prison, he was saying the exact same thing he was saying as the day he walked into prison. Those 3 decades changed nothing about this man's commitment.
That dude is a game changer. He's changed the game in South Africa. All the problems South Africa still has, they would have way, way more had he not been a generous man. He's an amazing, generous man. I have no idea what he does in terms of financial generosity, but his generosity and forgiveness is second to none. I was going over to South Africa for the very first time, and I was reading his autobiography and just learned, amazing, this guy's in prison forever, unjustly there, and as he comes out, he can have a bloody revolution where he is the king, no question, and instead he leads the reconciliation commissions. He fosters the whole country into an attitude of forgiveness. That's the kind of generosity that dude has. I want to talk with him about that because I was hoping I was going to have a meeting with him at some point when I went over there, because as a result of our work here from Cincinnati in South Africa, we are known in the highest reaches of the government of South Africa. As a result of the buildings that have been built, the money that's been spent, the people that we've sent over there, and I was hopeful on one of my trips I was going to interact with him. I didn't get to, but if I would have, it would have been, talk to me about your generosity as it relates to forgiveness. Astounding. So we're today going to be talking about generosity, and we're going to be talking about financial generosity, and it's going to be a day where we get pushed a bit. It's going to be a day where we get stretched a bit. I'm going today not just be teaching, not just preaching. I'm going today to be coaching. I'm going to be coaching you, and I think it's going to be a good one today. So let's pray before we go any further. Father, I pray that you would help us today. Help us to hear, help us to receive, help us to see, and help us to do. And I pray that all that comes out of my mouth will be helpful to that end. Help us to be aligned and me aligned to the character of your son Jesus. Amen. One of the most generous people who ever lived, the most generous person who ever lived, is Jesus. It says this of him in the book of 2 Corinthians chapter 8, 9. We're going to be looking throughout the books of 1 and 2 Corinthians today as we look at this church in Corinth who are game changers. I believe Crossroads is called to be a game-changing church. In the same way that the city of Corinth had a church in it that had problems, but nonetheless, they were game changers. And here's what it says about Jesus. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake, he became poor, so that you by his poverty might become rich. The Bible communicates over and over again that though Jesus was born in Bethlehem, that was the beginning of his physical existence. He existed spiritually in the cosmos long before the earth was ever created. And so when he comes to earth, he has the riches that's due him by the glory of dwelling in the heavens, and he divests himself. He becomes poor. He divests himself of those riches to come down and be with us. And not only that, the riches of his morality, he divests himself of that as he hangs on a cross and dies a brutal death. He becomes poor so that we can be rich and we can be forgiven. Isn't it true that the most cheap people that you know are also the least forgiving people? You ever notice that? You ever go out to dinner with somebody who they just never tip well? I'm sure all of us in here tip really well. I'm sure all of us do really well. But you've ever noticed the people who get the most annoyed with the service are always the cheapest tippers? It's almost like they need to find something wrong so they don't have to give. You know, they're always the ones sending their food back. They're always doing that. They're bringing out the calculator to find 15% exactly what it is. They see the little thing in the menu. It says 18%. They go, well, 18%. I just learned the people that the roll with the flow in life, who get over grievances, who offer forgiveness, the people I know are also those who can write checks, also those who can divest themselves of finances. These things go hand in glove. They did with Jesus, they do with everybody who is going to be a game changer. We're doing this series because we are committed as a church at these four initiatives, starting different crossroads all over the region, starting CityLink, continuing that to happen, AIDS hospices, holistic care in South Africa, and rescuing girls from slavery in India and rehabilitating them to wholeness. This is core to who God has called us to. And these things are important and they need to be funded. And so we're doing this series to encourage us to continue to be faithful in what our commitments are. We need encouragement. I know I do. And we're also doing it to encourage those of us who are not engaged to enlist. We're encouraging us to enlist to help this work get done. And so today is part of that whole journey, and I think it's really great for us to hear from somebody who is a game changer and the things that they've been dealing with as they've been going forward on this 3-year campaign to give above and beyond what they normally give for these initiatives. Let's check out my friend Emmett.
So when it came around to campaign time, there just was this number, and this number was a lot larger than anything I ever thought we could do. At the same time, I got a letter that we were being sued from a previous business arrangement that I was in. And that was even a bigger number. That was a 6-figure number. And it was nothing that I did in the business. It was just by being part of the business that happened, you know. So it's, what do you do? And now it's like, well, let's plan for bankruptcy, which means you lose your house, you know, you lose everything, your name, your credit. And we had been good stewards and paid all our bills on time. I mean, we had a great credit rating. So this was devastating. But yet and still, I was, you know, employed, and we still made commitment. We made payments on our commitment. I didn't know why this happened. I know the Lord led me to the commitment, and that was way more important than whatever else was going on in our lives. It was just faith. I just knew that the Lord was going to see us through this, and I felt it was a test. And I needed to prove, I just needed to be faithful. So I asked, you know, my small group and larger group and people who I knew that were prayer warriors to pray for us, and told them the whole story. And it was a long time. I mean, if you can think about having this kind of way over you from the very beginning of the commitment up until just really weeks ago. My attorney said, well, maybe we just need to make some kind of an offer. So we threw out this number, and it was a 2-figure number, a low 2-figure number. And they refused. They said no. They rejected that offer. And the bankruptcy attorney says to me, he says, well, I got a number, and the number is lower actually than the number you offered. And I said, well, you got to know that they refused and rejected that number. He made the offer, and a day later he called me and he said, are you sitting down? And I said, yes. And he said, well, they accepted the lower number. And the lower number was like $10,000. And that was only God. I mean, you know, you don't go from 6 figures, you know, to $10,000 settlement. The Lord has been showing up in my life, all my life. And I'm not surprised that he brought me through. I can tell you, when I was going through the valley, that was not comfortable. I was afraid. I didn't know the outcome, but I knew that the outcome was going to be okay. For us, what are we going to do? We're going to make this commitment. It's going to probably be about the Lord, you know, seeing or just blessing us in a way that allows us to make the, I don't know how, it's going to be another miracle. And you know, he's asking every day. You know, he's just we're having a conversation. I'm praying every day about the commitment, how we're going to get there, and he's going to show up.
That, my friends, is a game changer. The way the game is normally played is your generosity is the last thing you think of. It's whatever is left over. And of course, if you get sued, all bets are off. Don't even think about giving. Don't even consider it. When God gets a hold of your life, he takes you to a different court. You think about things differently. You simply do things differently. Generosity doesn't become something you come and go. It becomes core to who you are. And as Demet is seeing, it doesn't necessarily mean it's easy, but you see the hand of God show up. I want to encourage us to see the hand of God showing up today. I'm going to talk about things I've said to a bunch of different folks for a while, and I want to coach you today. Whenever somebody has coached me, they've been very intense with me. If I was coaching you one-on-one over a cup of coffee, I wouldn't be as intense as I am, but coaches, when they're in the locker room, there's a different level of intensity. So just hear that in my heart. I want something for you today, not just from you, for you. And the week after April, we're going to have the opportunity to make commitments, to reaffirm the commitments we've made, and to enlist and make new commitments. We know 20% of the $48 million that's been committed is not going to come in. We know that. And so we know that we need to encourage all of us to be fulfilling and also encourage people who are newer to Crossroads to come in and not just fill that gap, but to actually help us go beyond. And by the way, no matter what happens this journey, my paycheck isn't affected at all. I don't work on commission. Interesting idea. I ought to think about that. I don't work on commission. My paycheck isn't going to go up or down. What happens? I just have felt this going on in my family and in people I know, and I just want to help you today. I want you to go to a new place. I've never met anybody who lives in America who wouldn't say that they're generous. Everyone thinks they're generous. In fact, if you're here today and you're not generous, would you please raise your hand? If you're not generous, please raise your hand. Yeah. I wish someone did. That'd be wonderful. If you did raise your hand, or at least maybe for not raising your hand, but you're thinking, yeah, I'm not generous, I'll tell you what you get. You get the self-awareness award. You do. You get the honesty award. Everybody believes that they're generous, and very rarely do we ever get a glimpse of reality. Some of us are getting glimpses of reality as we do our taxes. We do our taxes, and we want to have given as much money away as possible so we have as less of a tax bill as possible. And what do you know? Look at the numbers, and far south of 10%, far south of 5%, far south of 3%, the numbers don't lie. They don't lie. And someone said, well, I'm generous. It just doesn't always show up on, you know, 501c3 organization. Okay, where are you generous? What, you buy pizza for somebody once a month? What, 0.01% of what? The starting point to growth is understanding I must go somewhere. The starting point of growth is not defending where I am and why I'm not going to do anything differently. It's noticing that I have to go someplace. I expect over the next several weeks, we are going to be spiritually growing, and I expect that our attendance is going to be dropping. In fact, it's already dropping. I expect that, and I embrace it. Because very few people want to be pushed, want to be called to something beyond themselves, want to change. We want some view of spirituality where God says, whatever I'm doing right now is fine. He sprinkles fairy dust on me and nothing changed about my life. I just feel better about myself. And I love when God makes me feel better about myself. He does do that. More fairy dust, God, please. More fairy dust. I want more. But that's only one aspect of what God actually does. Every great game changer who has a long-term impact on anything, and let's just talk about sports for a moment, learns how to change their game. Game changers learn how to change their game. Michael Jordan was the greatest basketball player that ever lived. And it wasn't just because he had amazing muscle fibers that enabled him to jump. It was because as he came into the league and had the ability to dunk and work inside the key, as he aged, as the three-point line emerged as a dominant offensive weapon, he changed his game. He backed up his ability to shoot. He was able to drain the three numerously, and in the beginning of the years, he would come in and he would drive all the time. He was a one-man shooting machine, and as he aged, he became a team player, learned how to dish the ball. He changed his game. And that enabled him to go. And everybody who gets deeper and closer and more powerful with God learns how to change their game, learns how things are adjusted. And every generous person that we see in the Bible, every single one, and every generous person I've ever personally met, always has three characteristics that course through their veins. These three are always there, no exceptions. Number one, generous people are methodical. What does it mean to be methodical? It means that you have a method to how you give. There is a method to it. You don't leave it up to what's over at the end of the paycheck. You don't leave it up to what's been accrued in your investment account and then figure out how that works for taxes. You don't figure out who's going to email me and, okay, if I can kind of give you $50 for the cancer run, cool, which, great, do that, wonderful. But starting point, there's a baseline that says, I'm going to figure out how I'm going to do this. Anything you want to grow in, physically, intellectually, relationally, you have a method to those things. You don't leave them to chance. In the book of 1 Corinthians, again, these game changers, the church in Corinth, here's what it says. On the first day of every week, each one of you should set aside a sum of money in keeping with your income, saving it up so that when I come, no collections will have to be made. Now, the way they were meeting the needs of people, dispersing things, they didn't have wire transfers back then, they didn't even have checks. So as they would come and make their routes around, they would need to have a sum of money to get ministry done. And so the Apostle Paul, in speaking to this church, says, be methodical about it. Set a time when you do this. I recommend the first day of every week and a sum of money in keeping with your income, meaning a preset percentage. Every generous person knows the method to their generosity. They know when their baseline giving is, and they know what their baseline percentage is all the time. All the time. They don't leave it to chance. Never leave. Nothing that is important to us do we ever lead to chance. We have a method for it, a way to figure it out. Every generous person is methodical. Every generous person is also sacrificial. Sacrificial. Now, it's interesting when we think about sacrifice that every generous person I know bristles at the word sacrifice. They'll say, I don't know that I'm sacrificing because generous people immediately they hear sacrifice and they think that always means pain. They look at their life and go, yeah, I'm generous, but I'm still doing a lot of nice things. I got a lot of nice things. I still maybe got some money in the bank. I don't know. Sacrifice doesn't mean that you're destitute, naked, living in Norwood. I don't know why I pulled out Norwood. Living in Mount Lookout. Doesn't mean you're living in Mount Lookout, okay? Or naked in Hyde Park. That'd be really bad. Being sacrificial doesn't mean God has stripped everything from you and you have absolutely nothing. It means simply that there are things that you could have that you don't have. There's things that you used to have that you no longer have because of your giving. There's trips that you could take that you can't take because of your giving. There's digits that could be in an account someplace that now don't in that account someplace. You sacrifice is whenever you have strategically gone without something to be generous someplace else. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 1 to 3, it says this. We want you to know, brothers, about the grace of God that's been given among the churches of Macedonia, other game changers. For in a severe test of affliction, their abundance of joy and their extreme poverty have overflowed in a wealth of their generosity. For they gave according to their means, as I can testify, and beyond their means of their own accord. So of their own accord, no fair share saying this is what you have to do. No fair share, some manager at corporate telling you what your fair share is of your accord to hit United Way minimums. No. Of their own accord, they methodically figured out what to do, and they not only gave according to their means, but beyond their means. Now, how do you give beyond your means? You don't give beyond your means by giving on your credit card and not paying off the end of the month. Never do that. Never give out of debt. Don't do it. How do you give beyond your means? You give beyond your means because you commit to amounts of money methodically that's beyond what you currently have. That's what they were doing. They were saying, we're going to handle this, and I can forecast pretty well that I've got an income flow that's coming in, and so I'm going to hit this number. Even though I don't have it in my means right now, I'm pretty confident it's going to come up. And to do that means I'm going to have to go without certain things. Sacrifice. Every generous person is sacrificial. It doesn't look the same way with everybody. I know we've got a bunch of folks in our Game Change campaign right now who have sacrificed cable, sacrificed Netflix, awesome, amazing, great. Our first couple campaigns, Libby and I sacrificed cable, didn't have cable, couldn't sacrifice Netflix. It wasn't around back our last two campaigns. We've sacrificed those things. We in the past have sacrificed things like a paved driveway in Mount Lookout. We wanted to have, everyone we knew had a paved driveway, but we realized we can commit money that would go into paving our driveway instead of having stones in Mount Lookout. Instead, we'll do that. It was a sacrifice. Now, again, sacrifice. I mean, what? Have a little mud on the car. Big deal. Okay. It doesn't necessarily hurt our life, but it was something we could identify we could have that we chose not to have. And those sacrifices continued whether we were in a campaign or not. Right now, we're in this campaign, and we've kept cable. We have Netflix. By the way, I have no problem saying that because I know that for those of us who are generous who sacrifice those things, it's not about fair share. Hey, wait, I thought none of us were going to have cable. No, because as these verses have gone, as we spell out real clearly, it's what you've decided in your own heart. That's the next verse I'm going to share you. It's what God is asking me to do and what's happening there. One of the things that we've sacrificed a number of things on this campaign. Spring break we had last week, and I have two kids in college, and I have another child in junior high, and all the different spring breaks lined up. And normally we would say, awesome, the moon has aligned in our favor, let's go some traditional spring break spot and hang out for a week, and we couldn't do that. We couldn't do that. Main reason why we couldn't do that is because we couldn't afford, because of our giving, to do that for 5 days. And if you could, you did that, wonderful. But just for us and what we were doing, we couldn't do that. Instead, we did a one-day camping trip, and I got poison ivy. Wonderful. Great. But at least our dog Winston could go with us on the camping trip. Wonderful. Actually, and the other two kids weren't even with me. Just my youngest. We still had fun. It was awesome. A couple months ago, I had to sell a motorcycle. My son has a motorcycle. I still got a motorcycle, and I had two. I had a Harley and this one, and I realized I thought I could hit this commitment, and by keeping two motorcycles, I can't. So I had to sell my Harley. I love Harleys. It was awesome. Maybe someday again I'll have one. I just couldn't have it now. Now, I know here some of you are going, oh, here it is, the world's smallest violin. Cry me a river. You don't have two motorcycles any longer. Boo-hoo. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, it's a sacrifice for me. It's a sacrifice. And I'm not, and yes, I'm still doing fine. I'm not hungry. Got a lot of good things. I'm just able to identify things that I could have and things that I'm going without. And as a result of this, and I'm still living a good life, we have every month a financial pinch that we didn't before. Every month. Every month there is a reminder of it. And when I have that reminder, I go into this third one. Every generous person is methodical, is sacrificial, and here's the weird one, is cheerful. It's cheerful. Now, see, this sounds so weird because you think, gosh, the way the game is normally played is when you see something once get done, hope somebody else does it, and you just kind of throw in a dollar. That makes me cheerful. That makes me happy. Now, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way in the spirit realm. Here's what the book of 2 Corinthians chapter 9 says. Each one must give as he's decided in his heart. Decided in his heart between you and God, your own method, your own sacrifices. Each one is decided in his own heart, not reluctantly or under compulsion. We're coaching, we're challenging, but we're not compulsing and making anybody do anything. It's between you and God. For God loves a cheerful giver. God loves a cheerful giver. See, if God came down and just said, here's what you need to do, it's just X, you would simply be following the law instead of acting out of a loving relationship. And when I feel like it's between you and me, God, and this is something that I willingly want to do, and maybe I haven't heard a voice from heaven from you, maybe I haven't heard from God, but I feel like this is something that would honor you, and I want you to hear from me. There's a level of cheer, and God loves a cheerful giver. Now, I never really understood this verse until I took a look at it in context. You can kind of pull any verse out of the Bible, make it say whatever you want. Most of the time, you got to look at it in context. Look at the context of this verse, the very next section. And God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that having all sufficiency in all things, you may abound in every good work. So, how is it that you can be cheerful when you're methodical and sacrificial? Well, part of the answer is here. Part of the reason why you're cheerful is because you get more grace from God. God makes all grace abound. It's true. It's absolutely true. In the midst of difficult times, feeling pinched, noticing I could have this, but I don't have it because of giving this and that, you also realize you step back, God, and I can't fully describe it, I can't quantify it, but any generous person who fits these categories will tell you absolute truth. There is a different level of grace that's come my way. It's like God notices, sends opportunities, sends things. It's different. It makes you cheerful because you can notice these things. In fact, it makes you more grateful too. Because when you have all the resources in and of yourself, you don't need anything. And when a blessing comes along, you can say, well, that's because of my financial management. Versus, man, that's because of God. You appreciate things more. I think I tell you, watching the Final Four, I have cable right now. Still, every time I use cable, and I'm looking at that whole guide, what channel is on? The whole guide falls up. Every time I've done that, I go, oh, that's so awesome. I remember I had no cable and had no guide. I'm thankful for it. I am, honestly. I appreciate things that I have that I've gone without. And part of why you're cheerful too, and I want to awaken some of you to this, just notice. Don't you notice you play at a higher level? You just do. And this grace comes your way, and you're on the level, and you've got the values of Jesus coursing through your veins. You play at a higher level. You just do. You interpret events differently. You see people differently. You have an inner strength that you didn't have before. And when you start to notice all the things that happen as a result of being generous, it actually enables us to be cheerful when other people might look at that sum of money and go, what, are you crazy? I just want to remind you of that. I want to coach you that. Remind you of that. Man, look at the things that have happened in and through you. One of the things that we know physiologically is that we need a certain amount of stress to get stronger. We know that. I mean, if you're going to work out, if you're doing a little push-ups here, you're putting resistance on your muscles. You're putting stress on your muscles. Yes, you are. You are doing different movements. What are we doing right now? Stressing the muscle. Appropriate stress, resistance, because muscle fibers get stronger with that resistance. They get stronger. We need certain amounts of stress in order to be strong, in order to grow. And this works in every realm as well. The data is very clear. The medical data is very clear. If you are going after the American dream of retiring, a retirement that looks like never having to work, having a massive nest egg, going to Florida, getting mosquitoes sucking your veins, getting up in the morning with no job, no level of commitments, watching Wheel of Fortune and walking around a golf course, that's kind of the ideal that we have for how you will die earlier. It's just the medical facts. And I'm not saying you shouldn't move to Florida. I'm not saying you shouldn't watch Wheel of Fortune. I'm not saying you shouldn't golf. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is if you structure retirement so that you have no stress, medically it is factual, you will die sooner. There is an appropriate level of stress that all of us need. If we had a weightless, gravity-free environment, you would atrophy your muscles. You couldn't last in it long time. And this is what generosity does. It puts an appropriate level of stress in the system to grow us. It puts appropriate level of stuff that actually makes us stronger, that elevates our game. Everybody in here, I'm going to coach right now. I'm going to have unique words to you. I'm going to invite some people who represent you out on the stage right now. And these people represent everyone who has made a game change commitment on everybody who has not made a game change commitment. And I've said much of what I'm going to say to them, to people I've interacted with in a more personal setting. So I can't wait to coach all of us. I think we're all going to get something out of this. I understand too, I'm going to be way more intense in a locker room environment like I am right now than I would if I had you one-on-one. But here we go. First person I want to coach this person. I want to speak to you. Everyone in here is going to get spoken to. And you're going to know it when it comes your way. Here's a person right here who 20 months ago made a campaign commitment above and beyond what they regularly give. And the finish line over there, they're about on pace. They're about what they said they were going to do. If you looked at it in a linear equation, this person is on pace, on track to finish the way they methodically plan to, the way they sacrificially set about it. And yet, you might be struggling with a little cheer right now. I want to cheer you up. I want to cheer you on, and I want to encourage you. I want to remind you that you are doing what every spiritual great has ever done. Every single one. In fact, in the book of Corinthians, it has some unique words for you. Here's what it says. For they gave according to their means, as I can testify, and beyond their means, of their own accord, begging us earnestly for the favor. Man, how about that? Begging us, you're going on because you were looking for the favor of this, and I want to tell you, you're doing great. You're doing great. Awesome. I also want to encourage you right now, you could start to get a little tired. And it's also a bit normal to start looking to your left and looking to your right and seeing other people and starting to get maybe a little bit bitter. People at your same income level, you might be noticing they're taking better vacations. You may be noticing they have less stress. Hey, forget about them. It's not about what they're doing or what God's doing in your life. Focus on what God has done in your life. Look how far you've come. Look at the things, these videos that we see, like we saw the South African video, that's happening because of you. You are not living a normal life. You are funding and doing things that are beyond only the American dream. Well done, well done. Keep it up, you're doing good. That's about 25% of everybody who made a Game Change commitment is on pace. This represents people who've made a Game Change commitment and are behind pace. This is about 40% of everybody who's made a Game Change commitment. And I would tell you, hey, it's okay. Do not let discouragement set in. In fact, God understands where you are right now. Maybe you lost a job. Maybe some unforeseen medical crisis came in. Don't allow discouragement to come in right now. You run your race. Don't worry about that person up there and how they've done it. You run your race. In fact, there's some great words from the Bible to these game changers in Corinth that apply perfectly to you. Here's what it says. You desire to do it, so now finish doing it as well. Finish it. Get ready. You're going to finish. Finish doing it as well so that your readiness in desiring it may be matched by your completing it out of what you have. For if the readiness is there, it's acceptable according to what a person has, not according to what he or she does not have. Maybe you made commitments on what was coming in, and now something has totally changed your income flow, and God does not judge you. He says right there, the readiness is there, and he does not evaluate you and what you're not able to do because of income has changed. He says what you can do. You don't need to worry about what's happened. You don't need to worry about anyone else. You just run. In fact, you look discouraged. Man, you're doing, get your head up. Get your head up. Look at the prize out there. You are beyond normal already. Just focus on paycheck to paycheck, day to day. Keep moving as God blesses you and do the best you can because this is a journey. God may have caused some things to pause because he's going to do amazing things in you in the rest of the way. You're doing good. It's good. It's all good. It's all good. Okay. Now, this represents somebody who made a commitment, and never started. This is 25% of all commitments, made a commitment and never started. Now, some of this is because there may be some of you who were methodical about it, and you said, I got a big slug of cash that's coming in 2 years, I got a plan for that, and so we never said or ever expected people would be doing it linearly all the way through. So for some, it's like, yeah, I know, but I knew that it was going to be this way 40% of the way. Great, but that's not the way it is for most people I know of I've interacted with. So let me coach you. Hey, you remember when you made that commitment? You said you heard from God, and if you didn't hear a voice from God, you were telling God something that this is what I feel would honor you. You said that. That was your words. Jesus says, let your yes be yes and your no be no. This is a spiritual marker for you, and it's not about the size of the check so much as it is. You need to be a person who, when you say something, you do it. When you say it, you will do it. This is a defining moment for you, not just financially, but in every area of life. You've never started. You must start. And it's not because you've been devastated financially, because I'm positive in the last several months, you've gone to movies. You've gone to movies. You've gone and had a caramel latte mookie up your butty thing, whatever the heck those things are. You found money for other things, and you have never found money to do dollar one of a commitment that you made. That's not a good marker. Come on. You can do better than this. You can. The easiest cars to steer are those that are moving. So take a step. You got to take a, that's it. You're moving. Good. Take a step. You must start. Whatever it is, you must just, way to go. Excellent. Excellent. It's not over. God is still forming your character. Don't be discouraged. The lost opportunities. You run your race and look forward. All right. Now, we come all the way down here at the end. We got somebody who is feeling pretty good, as they should feel pretty good. They have crossed the finish line or about ready to cross the finish line. This is about 5% of everybody who is committed. So, let me tell you. Hey, well done. Well done, good and faithful servant. You said it and you did it. You finished. Awesome. 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 Now, here's some ways I want to coach you and have you think here. It very well may be, and I'm assuming you heard from God, and God did some amazing things in your life, and it's going to be tempting for you to say, I ran that race, I never have to do that again. Wrong. Wrong. It was easier than you thought it was, wasn't it? This is a lifestyle, a generous thing that God may be doing. In fact, I'm asking you to consider that maybe God has so uniquely blessed you that he's asking you to step in and up your commitments. He's asking you to reconsider some things that he may want you to do and to be a part of. And if it's not here at Crossroads, even if you're here at Crossroads, maybe it's giving someplace else. This was so, I wouldn't say easy, because you felt it, but nonetheless, you finished it long before you expected. Well done. Well done. This is a marker for you, because I've seen many people who accomplish big goals say, I did that, move on, next one. No, this goal of being generous, it continues going on and on and on, and we need people like you to continue setting paces for us. Notice the blessing of God in your life and be very wise with it. Well done. Proud of you. Proud of you. And we have people up here who have never made game change commitments, and there's two different kinds of people here. There's someone who was around during game change and decided not to commit, and there's someone who is new to Crossroads, and so therefore never understood what game change was. This is 45% of our weekend attendance. So I have different coaching for both. All right, start with you. You know, we said that you didn't, we just had to go before God, and we had to ask and just respond to God, and maybe God doesn't want you to do anything more. And maybe, but I know from interacting with many people that wasn't a spiritual journey. They never really dialed in the intensity, didn't go to prayer experiences, didn't really, they just had an attitude to say, and that was probably you. I feel for you, I really do, because you can take no sense of satisfaction or pride when you see what's happening in South Africa. You can't take any. You can't take any sense of satisfaction or hoping that knowing the people in Florence are going to come in a relationship with Jesus. You can't share in that. And you say, well, I don't, where's all the money going? I don't know where all the money's going. That's a really good question. It's an awful excuse. Where's all the money going? You freaking drink it every week. What do you mean, where's it all going? can you not see where it's going? Now, if you really want to know more, we got more for you. There's a podcast we've done before. We're going to reissue that with all kind of information. Check that out. But hey, come on. Then look at what's happening right now. How can you sit this out? What about the game change initiatives don't you like? Do you not like more people coming to know Jesus? Do you not like people in Cincinnati coming out of poverty? Do you not like people who are dying of AIDS living longer? Do you not like the fact that we are rescuing girls and what is there not to like? Come on, change your game. Come on, you can't stay the way you are and expect more powerful things to happen. It can't happen. You got to get off the stands. You got to get off the stands, and you're going to be able to do that in 3 weeks. Come on. All right, you. Yes. We're so excited you're here. So thankful you're here. Wonderful. You're what's called opportunity. Yes, you are. honestly, we're excited you're here. We assume that you're here, God's invited you here, and everybody who's a part of Crossroads is a part of all these initiatives. You cannot be a part of Crossroads and not be a part of these initiatives. And so you hold a lot of power in your decisions over the next several weeks, a lot. You are going to help define whether or not all these projects get done to the level that we've envisioned and even beyond. I want to tell you, it's going to be great for you. We're counting on you. We want the best for you. And I'm just asking you to make yourselves aware of what's happening around here, because one of the biggest problems with those of us who have been around Crossroads for a long time is we have the sin of familiarity. We're just familiar with things and we've gotten used to it. You're fresh. You know if this is unusual. Notice that. There's people I know that would walk on their hands and knees on broken glass to be a part of a church that's doing the things that we're doing and where the grace of God is so prevalent. And you see it. You feel it more than most people because it's fresh to you. And I want you to stay fresh. And I want you to be ready to make a generous commitment that God asked you to make the week after Easter. And man, just thanks for staying here. A lot of people in a series that was going to be intense would have left, but you're still here because you're the kind of people that we have at Crossroads. Way to go. Way to go. Now, I don't know, thank you for all these folks. I don't know where that is with you, but I'll tell you, I promise you, those are the kind of things that God is saying to us, and all we need to do is say, this is what growth looks like. These kind of conversations, these kind of choices, this is what growth looks like, and it looks like going before God and saying, God, I just want to be with you. I don't necessarily want to pay for things. I don't necessarily want this or that. I just want to hear from you. I want you to lead me. Would you lead me, God? Let's stand right now. And we're going to actually have this song as our closing prayer. We're going to say, God, just lead me over the next few weeks. Lead me.